You're listening to the iFilmmaker Podcast, the show where we learn and grow in the freelance filmmaking industry. I am your host, Ariel Martinez.
All right, welcome back to the iFilmmaker Podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez. Today I have a great conversation for you guys with Tessa and Carolina of the Femme Regard Podcast. Tessa and Carolina are both actresses over in Hollywood. They're living in LA and they have their own production company, but they also run a podcast which is doing very well. And I have a great sit-down conversation with them, and you know, they're all about women in the industry, and we it was very refreshing to get a different perspective on my own, I guess, thinking of how the industry is. And I say this many times in this episode, I'm not anywhere near Hollywood in the sense that I prefer not to. I like the way that I'm working now. I don't need to get myself into Hollywood for me to feel like I'm having a successful career. I have no desire to really make it in Hollywood or whatnot, even for documentary filmmaking, because it's just, I guess, some stigmas that come with that in my head. And I love that I had this conversation with Tessa and Carolina regarding this topic, and more specifically in women in the industry and whatnot. So I was able to get some of my own questions answered. But more than anything, them sharing their story and, you know, how they've been handling the entire environment over in Hollywood. So before we get to our conversations with them, I just want to remind you guys that our Facebook group is still live and kicking. So make sure that if you haven't already done so, go and become a member of our iFilmmaker Podcast Facebook group. I'm there. That's where I'll be posting all of our guests before they go on. And I'm asking you guys to send in your questions to do that. Over on Patreon, the iFilmmaker Patreon account, I've been putting more updates on my work. I've been doing some vlogging over there and kind of talking to you guys on much more specific things that I probably may or may not make it a full episode on the podcast. But like, this is more more of an intimate moment where, you know, sometimes I'll pick up my phone or I'll just turn on the camera over here on my desk and kind of give a recap of what happened that day. And those are the kinds of things that I'm kind of putting on the vlog, in addition to the 360 videos of the behind the scenes for my production shoots. I've been posting those up there as well. So if you haven't already done so, go and check out the iFilmmaker Podcast Patreon account. You can find that over at patreon.com/iFilmmaker. There's also a link to that right down in the show notes for this episode. If you haven't checked that out, Jackson Kingsley has a fantastic video business mastery seminar, is where he is listing his top 10 secrets to video business success. This is an absolutely free webinar that you can just tune in for 40 minutes. That's a ton of information. That Jackson Kingsley, I had him on the show several episodes back, and Jackson is just basically sharing a ton of knowledge, a lot of great information and insight into his filmmaking career, and he's just sharing a lot of the stuff that he's learned throughout the years with you. And with the link in the show notes for this episode, you get a nice discounted price at the very end. So that's pretty cool to check out and take advantage of that. And lastly, if you haven't already done so, leave this podcast a review. If you're liking it, if you're enjoying it, share it with your friends and leave us a review over at iTunes. We really definitely do appreciate that. It helps us with the ratings and it helps more people, more eyes get their hands and their eyes on this podcast, or in this case, their ears. So I really appreciate that a lot. And with all that being out of the way, here's my conversation with Tessa and Carolina of Femme Regard. Tessa and Carolina, thank you so much for coming on the iFilmmaker Podcast. It's great to have you guys.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
So you guys have a production company and a podcast called Femme Regard. Can you give a little bit of background as to what that is, what the whole inspiration for that is, and sort of where you guys come from in that realm?
Sure. Well, we started the production company about 2 years ago when we decided we wanted to team up and start making some films. And, you know, we really wanted to have a mission behind it, and a message that we really wanted to share in our films. So for us, something that's really important is female empowerment and female stories being told, and stories being told from the female perspective, and giving equal opportunity to women in film. So that's all something that is very important to us, and we want to share with our audiences, and we want to team up with lots of amazing female filmmakers. Because, you know, when we were starting out, we realized, like, in our circle of people we knew, we had like no female directors, DPs, like any of that. We were like, what? We're women. Like, what? How do we not know other women in the industry, you know? And it really shocked us. So it's been amazing getting to know so many female filmmakers and seeing such awesome stuff that they put out. So a year into having the production company, we decided to start the podcast too. So Carolina, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah. And just real quick, our production company's name, FemRegard, and our podcast, which is the FemRegard Podcast, is derived from the French term regard féminine, which stands for, I wish I could do it in the French accent because that'd be a lot cuter.
Regard féminine.
Thank you, Tessa. Love that. Regard féminine. Which stands for the female gaze, so the female perspective, and everything Tessa just said is why we chose that name. So yeah, a year later, we were like, how can we continue to tell our audience about our journey when we've started with our first film project, which was a Western. And I'm sure, as you know, Ariel, and a lot of independent filmmakers who are already out there and making projects know the time it takes to make something.
Oh, man.
And right? It's just, yeah. It doesn't get done in a day. And, right. You know, the different stages of productions can take up to a year, years, who knows? And sometimes it could be quick as a month. It really all varies. Mm-hmm. But we just didn't know how we could communicate that to our first, like our close circle of friends and family, which is what we had starting out. And, you know, our filmmaker friends at the moment, but we really wanted to bridge that into a larger community, to network with other filmmakers, but also really share our journey, because it was just hard to post about it or talk about it. And we thought, you know what? A podcast would really be a great medium for us to tell our story and to hear other filmmakers' stories. And just get inspired knowing this doesn't happen a day. And this was my journey. As we always tell our audience, there is no one clear direct path. There's just ways to educate yourself and know maybe this is a better decision. And did that filmmaker's journey resonate with me? Because maybe I'm in the same boat and I have these set of skills that can really help me take off or get my project done. So that's where we kind of started to.
That's super interesting. And
yeah.
And what has been the response, more or less, to the message that you guys are putting out there?
Yeah, it's been overall really positive. As Tessa's mentioned, through this podcast, we've been able to network with so many female filmmakers, and not only like network, but figure out the platforms where to find them. And a lot of it has been through social media, but different organizations like Women in Film, Free the Bid, Free the Work, and now we're just finding more and more. So that's been good. And we do have male like speakers come on too, because we're not about shunning them at all. We just want to amplify those voices that, you know, are new, especially to us, since we want them in our network of friends.
So yeah. So to, I guess to make it clear, you're not trying to stop anyone from, you know, from or sort of blocking anyone from pursuing their passion, but just trying to elevate the female voice in the filmmaking community.
Exactly. I mean, you know, for us, like, really, the production company is female-centered, as we talked about. And we don't work exclusively with women, but we really try to get as many women involved in a project as we can.
Gotcha.
The podcast is more kind of just independent filmmaking focused. And we do try to get a lot of women guests on and talk about all of that. But really, we want to expand that to the entire independent filmmaking community. And something else that has been really cool that we've we haven't really noticed until the podcast came out is that a lot of our audience isn't even filmmakers. Like, we expected a lot of our audience and the people we connect with to also be people kind of at our level, you know, like beginner independent filmmakers. And we've found so much support from people that are just interested in what we're doing and support what we're doing and have nothing to do with the industry at all. So, wow. So that's been a really cool thing too.
That's very interesting that you can find support like that from people that are not even in the same mindset, and just people that want to see females be elevated in any aspect. That's very interesting. And have you received any negative, because I know that when it gets to the topic of female empowerment and all that stuff, it might rub some people the wrong way. And I think that's mostly just because maybe a message is being relayed wrong or something like that. Has there been any negative or just overwhelmingly positive?
I can't say we've really had any backlash, to be quite honest, which has been refreshing.
I think it's good, just because I don't think that you're attacking men, and I think that that's why you're not receiving any backlash. It's not that you're attacking men; it's that you're trying to elevate women, and it's very refreshing to see a movement like that. It's something that everyone, I think, can get behind. Also, So what have been some of the challenges that you have faced when, you know, you're trying to do two things here at once, and you're sort of trying to have your cake and eat it too. You're trying to have a production company, and obviously everyone wants to be successful, but you're also trying to sort of cater to women as well. You're trying to help out as many women as possible and get them involved as much. What challenges come with that?
I think one of the big things for us has been, you know, with independent filmmaking in general, it's always the money. Right? Okay. Like finding that money to fund what you're doing. And a big way to help with that is to hire people you know. And we, through the podcast especially, have been really expanding our network of people. So that's been super, super helpful. But in the beginning, it was very, like I said, in the very beginning, we knew hardly any female filmmakers. And we wanted to have, you know, a female director and this and that. And we didn't know anyone. And it was just really difficult to start out that way and try to find the funds and, you know, see if we can hire people that are willing to work with us for free because they believe in it. But, you know, when you don't even know someone and you just contact them, they're not going to work for you for free.
Right.
So that whole process of the independent film in general has been a little bit of a struggle.
I can imagine it'd be very difficult to try to, I guess, evaluate different resumes when you have in one hand a female that really wants to be a part of it, but on the other hand you have someone that's more qualified and might not be so much. You know, how many more female, I guess, applications or interests are for certain roles over male? Like, how many more are applying for certain roles?
So Tessa and I are gearing towards our next like proof of concept for a feature.
Okay.
And so we haven't had a chance to really like, okay, we're going to have an application process just yet.
Sure.
But I think something we're thinking about moving forward so we can do this the way we want with more women involved. I feel like we just need to take the time, and that's something, you know, usually everyone's in a rush to get the projects going and jump in. But okay, if we want someone we trust, not only because they seem qualified on paper, but I feel like with filmmaking, it's like, it's a relationship, right? And so that's why we're really glad we have the podcast, because we started to form those relationships, but then to also continue to cultivate. And I think from what we've seen as on our roster right now, there's a lot of female directors and I would say DPs as well, Tessa. I feel like there's an equal playing field. I've started to eye some key grips and colorists, and we know an editor who's fantastic. So we've started, I think if for other women out there who are, or and men who want to hire more, because we're like, you know, guys, help us out, hire women. You know, you just have to do the work. You have to pay attention to who's out there, because just like you fall in love with your male, female DPs and cinematographers, directors, it's the same thing with women. You got to watch the work that's out there and then find someone who jives with your style and your direction. And so I feel like that's how we're going to try and move forward. So we don't feel like, okay, now we're stuck again with just the same people we know.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I don't know if that answers your question.
How many different hats are you guys wearing? I know you guys do acting as well. But in production, right? How many hats do you guys wear?
So when we first started out, another kind of goal that we had with our production company was to create things that we could be in, you know, parts that we wanted as actresses that we weren't getting otherwise. So actor is a big one. Writer, Carolina's really the writer out of the two of us. She's currently writing our next feature script. We've dabbled, especially again, Carolina, with directing. And then producer, we're always, you know, it's been our projects, our babies. So we want to be the final say, the kind of person leading everything. So we've been producer. We've dabbled in pretty much everything. I mean, like I've done sound.
I do the editing and post.
Yeah, exactly. Editing. It's good to learn all of those things too. And I feel like with especially like super low budget indie filmmaking, like you kind of have to. You just don't have the budget to hire all those people or, you know. But it's also been helpful for us to learn like, okay, this is something I really actually want to pursue in future projects. This is something we gotta hire somebody else to do because I don't ever want to do again.
Right.
Yeah, so it's been, I would say, more out of necessity so far. But we're learning which hats we want to keep on at this point.
So you two started as actors, which is what landed you both in LA, right? Mm-hmm. And decided, you know, if you know, in between jobs, we can make our own work, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how this whole Femme Regard movement started. Interesting.
Yeah. In the actor world too, like when around the time Tessa and I met each other in an acting class, there was all this talk with create your own content. And it's like, okay. So you know, like you start doing things with friends, which is good. You should like start creating things. That's what everyone says to do. Mm-hmm. And through that, that's when I think Tessa and I realized we had a real connection and we really wanted to get the work done and not just talk about it. So that's, I feel like, what kind of even propelled us forward in working with each other. Because you just learn, like, I would encourage anyone, you don't know until you're doing things, you're really trying to, and that's how you can learn that you actually have a lot of connections that you didn't think you had. And you can keep making projects. So that was kind of rewarding to see.
Interesting. So I'm not in the filmmaking world. I'm not in the Hollywood world. I am as far away from Hollywood as possible. I like it like that. I am a freelance filmmaker, and I work, you know, I have my clients that hire me to do stuff. So what is the atmosphere like over there for a woman in Hollywood, in LA?
You know, it's interesting because there's some really big pluses and some really big minuses, I think.
Okay.
It's awesome to be in a place where you are constantly surrounded by your craft and opportunity. You know, I mean, like I'm from a small town an hour outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and there's a decent amount of film in Pittsburgh, but like to put a crew together, to find a whole cast of actors to make your own feature film is like really difficult in a place like that.
Can imagine.
And out here though, it's, you know, you can find whoever you need to. You're going to find people that are willing to work for free. You're going to find completely professional people, like whatever you need. So that's really awesome. But the downside is, you know, being in such a major market that until you make it, like you are a small fish in a huge pond, no matter what. And I mean, that I think applies to anyone kind of at our level, male or female, doesn't even matter, you know. But I do think also that the societal, you know, society is changing.
Okay.
And it's really coming to the forefront how much, how important it is for women to really be seen.
Yeah.
And for women's stories to be heard. And I think it's really a fantastic time for us as female filmmakers. And, you know, I'm glad that we're getting into this now and we didn't have to, you know, do this 10 years ago. When it would have been a lot more difficult. Right. But yeah, it's really exciting to be in a time where people really are eager to hear women's stories.
Do you think that things are much easier now, especially with the advancement in technology now where everybody can have a phone, a great camera in their pocket and make their own content and don't really have to wait for people? You could just put your stuff out there whenever you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we tell our listeners all the time to go and just experiment. And that's actually how we got a couple of our shorts done and practiced. Again, as Tessa said, the different roles and hats and learn more of what we were good at and what we could get better at. And there's a lot you can do with it. So totally, totally.
That's awesome. So what are some of the roles that you guys have played in the industry so far? Like what projects are you guys working on and things like that?
Well, our first one, which I think is probably the most... It's been the biggest struggle, but also the most fun.
It's always a struggle.
Yeah. We decided we wanted to create a Western. Okay. And we actually kind of set aside, but are going back to the full feature length script. But in the meantime, our very first project was filming the kind of proof of concept trailer.
Can you imagine two novice filmmakers who have no idea what they're doing, getting stuntmen, getting horses, shooting in the desert, like the whole thing. And Tess and I were like, this is going to be easier because we're in California. We have the setting.
We had no idea.
Oh, man.
We had no idea. But that's what we tell our listeners. Sometimes you just got to jump in and do it. And now, like, that's why we've taken the time to really, like, learn everything from it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Like, Tess and I love horseback riding. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, cool for us to keep. Like, and the... being able to act in period pieces. That's also something we're passionate about. So that was that was something we want to still solidify. Yeah. So for our production company, we really want to have two solid proofs of concepts with the full features. So that way, whoever wants to help invest us, we can move forward with these two projects. So our second one now is a film noir again, but a modern one. So it's going to be a modern take. So again, kind of using that nostalgic Hollywood element and bring it forth to a present day scenario. That's also what we want to have going on.
That's
and so,
awesome. Yeah, we're going towards that. I can't even imagine trying to write a feature, let alone shoot one. My goodness, the amount of time and effort and just... Oh, it's just
It's an that's incredible why again. Amount that's of work. Why we have the podcast. That's right. That's exactly why. Because I would like constantly throughout the episode, we're like, so that Western, remember this? So the film noir we're writing, and we discovered this the other day. You know, so that's why we can keep talking about it because it is such a the journey is long, and but it is worth it in the end.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So tell me more about the podcast. What kind of information, what do you talk about on there? What content do you have and what sort of guests do you usually look for?
Sure. So we have in the beginning, we alternated between episodes with just the two of us and then an episode with a guest. Now at this point, five seasons in, we're a lot more guest heavy. But basically like with our journey that we wanted to share with our listeners, when we were going through it and learning everything as we were doing it, we realized like there's so many questions we didn't even know to ask. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we wanted to share that with our listeners, like things that they're not going to learn in a class. They're not even going to know to ask.
Setting up an LLC, like, just insane. And like the paperwork, like, you know, so we tried to, it was information overload in the beginning a little bit, but we wanted that out there because, again, that's not something we went to school and learned and sat down in a business class. It was like, okay.
Did you both go to film school?
Neither of us did, actually.
Oh, good. Me neither.
So we love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I never went to film school. That's also part of my background. But yeah, it's good that you're putting that information out there, because I think that, and I get that question all the time about film school. Do they need to go to film school? And you know what? A few years ago, I was, not even a few, maybe 4 years ago, I had mixed feelings about that. But today I can confidently say absolutely not. Just because the price, you just cannot, you can't justify the price compared to what's out there already. It's just not justifiable, which is, you know, it sucks. But, you know, and you know, I learned, and everybody that has gone to film school, every single 100% of the people that I've spoken to regarding film school that have gone to film school said that they learned a lot more on YouTube than they ever did on film school, you know, so.
Yeah, it's been our best friend.
And then, right, Tessa? And then many, yeah, and then many times, you know, you have sometimes professors that are so locked in one form of filmmaking where they make you do a technique that they tell you that it has to be done this way. And then you come out of film school being very narrow-minded in not allowing your mind to explore the different types of techniques that are out there. And I'm talking like whether it's acting, editing, shooting, anything. You know, there. I think that that's, you know, it happens a lot in film school with students that are very narrow-minded. And I've seen the effects of that firsthand of, you know, people coming out of film school and kind of sort of thinking in that way. And
yeah, but, I mean, the other thing about it too is like Carolina and I both went for performance, and it's the same in that sort of major. It's the same in film school, is they don't prepare you for the actual career,
right.
You know, like you don't get the business courses. Nope. You don't learn any of that. And that's like the most important part, especially when you're first starting out. So
yeah,
that like blows my mind.
Yeah, that's actually, I share a lot about that here on my podcast where, you know, we'll talk about. And it's super ironic that I have a podcast about filmmaking, which is a very visual art, you know? So, but I tend to talk a lot about that stuff, like the contracts that I write with my clients, the way I interact with my clients, how I respond to emails, you know, how I sort of...
Oh, that's super awesome.
Yeah, how I sort of...
I want to hear this.
Yeah, no, so there's a ton of that. But then one of the main things that I try to push is that there's no right or wrong way to do this. This is just the way that I've done it, right? This is what works for me.
Right.
It may not work for you. I'm okay being a little bit more flexible with my rates, and then this is how I go about that, and how, you know, there's several podcasts where I'm explaining and breaking down how I charge my clients, and why and when I charge them in that manner. But yeah, I mean, having information like that is really, really beneficial. It's things that I would like to hear when I was starting out, basically. So
exactly,
just putting yourself in that position. So yeah, I think that you guys, you know, it being the position that you are, sort of figuring out your journey, I think it's awesome that you're sharing the information as you're learning as well. And that's essentially how many of us started also, is whether it's on YouTube, podcasting, and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's important for us too to bring on guests that are a lot more experienced in whatever field of filmmaking they come from, because, you know, we want to share what we've learned in our journey, but we tell our guests or our listeners all the time, like, this is what worked for us, this is what we've learned, but like, either that might not work for you, or that might change, you know, even 6 months from now. It's constantly changing. So it's really good for us to bring on people that, you know, have been doing this for years and years and have worked through, you know, that technique and another technique and whatever, because we learn a ton too from our guests.
Yeah.
I mean, every episode that we bring a guest on, we learn something. So, yeah.
No, absolutely. I love doing that where I bring in guests that do things a little bit different than I do, or sometimes a lot different than I do. And even on the episode, we have some sort of back and forth in how they do things and how that might not work for me. But I always make it a point to explain to people that that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that it's different. That's all, you know, and whatever works for you, it's really what's going to work for you. I'm not, you know, I like my style of shooting is very dynamic. It's very fast paced. That's why gimbals don't work for me. It's just my style of shooting. I do handheld a lot. It's much easier and much, you know, I can move around and get much more shots, which is more important than getting the nice shots oftentimes. Sometimes if I have extra time, but it's just different things. It's different aspects, different variables that go into why and how and when you do stuff. So I think it's really good to have different opinions.
Yeah. You know? Oh, absolutely. Agreed. And we try to like also branch out to the different departments or different like set skills. Like if it's specifically you're a writer or from being someone who, yeah, is the DP and or interested in music video production, because that maybe isn't like just that maybe isn't our journey, but it could be someone who's figuring out the filmmaking in general that, oh, maybe that's something. I love music. I've always loved music and I'm trying to get into film. Why don't I bridge those two things together?
Right.
It's actually really cool. I feel like we've heard a lot of our guests who aren't even in the music video world be inspired by music and how that influences their writing or editing styles. So that's been fun to hear. And like,
Yeah. So is FilmRegard the production company mainly focused on narratives, or is it open to like a bunch of different projects?
We're pretty open. I mean, like I said, this journey, we've been figuring out our style the entire time and what we really like in the end want to concentrate on. I think narratives are kind of what we are concentrating on the most, what we're the most interested in, but we're totally open. We did do one music video already, and we want to do some more. Like, we want to just play and have fun and create some really awesome projects.
I love that you mentioned that, because this week I'm releasing two music videos. It's funny because I'm a documentary filmmaker. That's my, I don't do narratives, not because I don't like them. It's just because I like to do projects that I don't have to rely on too many people to do. And I love the authentic, organic stories that you get from documentary filmmaking. And I love that. I love to find interesting people and telling their story. That's like legitimately what I love to do. So that's why I'm more drawn to documentary. And the fact that I can do it myself. You know, I usually operate as a one-man band. Sometimes I'll have an assistant or two. But I do a lot of work for my church. It's really more volunteer ministry work, really. And it's just fun. I love it. It's a blast because the level of creativity that I can have is just endless. So we're releasing. We shot two music videos that I'm actually pretty proud of. One of them I was a DP and colorist. The other one, the Father's Day one that we're releasing in a few days, I just did everything top to bottom, which was a lot of fun, and I think it came out really well. We'll be releasing that soon. So that's a lot of fun.
I love that you said congrats, and I love that you said, you know, you had so much fun, especially that second one where you did the entire thing, because that's something like I've learned in the editing process and the editors that we've had on our show too. It's just as important to the filmmaking, the storytelling, and you really get to like play and like learn how much that's the cuts have that impact. It is. It really is. Best. So like I've been actually, once I figured out how to edit, because that took a year of like trial and error, I was getting so frustrated. It was ridiculous. But also my computer was just not, I didn't like, you have to learn things like what makes the computer even go fast, and that could be part of your struggle. Like, it's like mind-blowing.
I have some podcast episodes regarding my computer and my setup and whatnot, so you can check that
out. Yes. But that took literally a year of just like learning, but now I've gotten to the point where I can edit and really enjoy that, because it's just as like fun as shooting it and like acting in it, because you get to like it's storytelling, and it's a big part of storytelling.
Right.
It's what you see at the end of the whole
things tamale. Are a lot easier when you have the capability of just doing absolutely everything yourself. You don't have to rely on finding an editor, finding a colorist, finding, you know, a DP or whatever, anybody with a camera. And that's what I'm mostly drawn to. That's why I've basically spent the good part of the last 5-6 years building up my arsenal of just equipment. Like just getting everything I absolutely need to a certain extent. Obviously I can't just, I'll go broke if I continue to do that stuff, but
of course
it's fun to be creative. It's just so fun to make your own projects, you know, and obviously a dream that I think many freelance videographers or filmmakers have is just to get paid to do the content that you love to do, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. that's so Absolutely. Much fun. And my opinion is that do the content that you love to do, you know, don't wait to get paid to do it and do it. And I think that, you know, you guys are doing that with your Western and the narratives that you want to create. And that's awesome. It takes a lot of time and effort. And, yeah, I think to make it a feature is like, wow, hats off to you, because that's a huge undertaking. That's a huge undertaking for, you know, those that are looking to, you know, to what's funny? My passion projects are the ones that bring me work. The jobs that I love to do, that I love, you know, the stories that I love to tell, the interesting stories. Like if I find somebody with an interesting story, I'll make it a thing to make a passion project out of that. I want to do a short mm-hmm. documentary with them. And I do it. And mm-hmm. my clients that hire me usually because of those jobs, those not even jobs, those passion projects. So that's what they're hiring me to do, to sort of, you know, they'll reference that video and they'll say, we want to shoot something like this, you know, and I get jobs yeah. like that, you know. So, you know, making jobs for yourself, it's something that I've been preaching since I started my industry. I started, you know, making videos, really. If you don't have work, make work for yourself. Like, do the stuff that you mm-hmm. love to do. And I think now is a better time, like I mentioned earlier. There's no better time than now to do that, you know, when free access to the internet, you know, to cameras, prices are just going ridiculously low. All these products that are coming out, it's just no better time to do that stuff.
Yeah. And there's so much, I mean, you had asked earlier about, you know, like using phones and stuff like that. There's just so many opportunities to learn how to eventually get to the big scale from the small scale, you know, like starting by filming on your phone, mm-hmm. starting by putting things out on platforms like TikTok and Instagram and whatever. Like, you know, there's such, like, everybody's doing it. You don't have to be a filmmaker to do mm-hmm. it, but it's such a good way to learn because you have all of those things totally available to you.
Because mm-hmm. you're shooting, then you're editing, you're still yeah. doing all, you're directing, you're still having to learn all three skills when you, even on a phone, like, you know, mm-hmm. using that. It's, yeah, exactly. You have to, from a small scale, you're still utilizing those three skills and building on that.
Yeah.
And I love that you said, I love your whole ordeal about the passion projects, especially because, yeah, when I feel like you're really invested and involved and like believe in a message, yeah. that just hits harder to the audience you want to work with and build with. So that's really inspiring to hear that you've been able to continue working in the stories that you are passionate about just by filming them yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, and that's something that I get those messages all the time. You know, it boggles my mind that that's not common knowledge for people to just put two and two together. If no one's hiring you yet, maybe it's because you don't have anything that's worthy of showing them. So make something that's worthy of showing them. It boggles my mind that people kind of don't understand that, you know? And
well, like you said, uh-huh. some filmmakers come from film school, which when they're told yes. that you have to produce A, B, and C
right.
to be noticed or what's industry standard, right? What's classified as that to really yeah. make up your footprint in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But no,
I never thought about that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's a frustration sometimes when I'm answering people, it just gets tiresome answering the same thing the same way over and over again. Anyways, and even the whole, I don't know, are you guys, like, are you, what's it called, SAG the union, the whole thing?
Well, we're not. I'm SAG eligible, which means kind of at this point I can do both for a little while. And then Carolina, you're non-union still, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That... So, which is kind of, that's a whole nother debate. I know.
I don't know too much about that. No offense to anybody, but the once, maybe twice, really the one time that I worked on a SAG project, it was terrible. Like, so many rules, right? Just for being a part of a union and it being a union project. Oh my gosh, I don't know how people could, that's crazy. Like, to me, someone that is so used to like shooting freely as a documentary filmmaker, to go and be a part of a project that had so many guidelines, you know, that they're telling me, you know, I'm bringing my own LED lights to the set that have not been turned on yet. This person's telling me to put my gloves on. Like, wait, they're not hot, first of all, and they're LED lights, second of all, and they're like, oh my goodness. And you know, the whole, you know, the timing and it's a beast. It's a beast, my goodness.
It's definitely a decision you have to.
Oh no!
Be fully aware
for sure. And for anybody listening, that obviously all, you know, a lot of union members probably listen here as well. It's not a diss or anything. I'm just personally, my own experience has just been that. It's just been a very huge like nuisance, I guess. Every time I try to. Cooperate with that, but anyways,
it's one of those things that there's so many like pluses and minuses on both sides,
right?
Like, as an actor, that's one whole category, but as a filmmaker, like, you know, if you're doing a SAG project, like, you know, you're gonna get people that know what they're doing, they have the experience, you're following all the rules, so they're all gonna be happy. Everybody's probably making more money, but then you're also spending way more money. You have to, like you said, comply with like all these little things. I mean, there's hundreds of rules, you know, so it's a lot. I mean, it's tough. I think as an independent filmmaker, I personally like doing non-union projects a lot more, but again, that's, you know, if you want certain crew and actors that are union, you have to make that sacrifice.
You have to make it union. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So what, I know you said you had the Western that you guys are working on. What other projects, what do you see for the future of Femme Regard, or for the future of like the message that you guys are trying to put out there? Like, what do you see as the future for women in the industry?
I am really drawn to reading about female writers back in the past, like let's talk from the 40s to the 60s, and something like, I haven't even told Tessa this, but she knows like I love women writers and I bring up quotes and stuff all the time. And I probably have mentioned this to you. She hears all my ideas and she's just like, okay, Caroline, we need to focus. And I'm like, I know. She's the Virgo brain. I'm the Scorpio creative. That's why we tell everyone. But yeah, I found a lot of women writers back then who couldn't have a voice because they were women and like really put their stories out there. So that, you know, they kind of had to like publish them in a secret way, or they couldn't express their sexual freedom. And I feel like in the future, like doing kind of like a biography type story on one of these women, or all, or like influence some of their stories into a feature film, would be really inspiring and awesome to bring to light some women in the past who haven't had that recognition, and how I just feel like learning their journey is a cool way to also put a female perspective. Be able to hire more women writers and directors to direct a story like that. Because that's important to us. Yeah.
In your opinion, do you see that there's less opportunity for women? And if that's the case, why is that happening? Again, in your opinion, like based on what you guys see out there.
I think it kind of starts from the top down. So if you look at like big studio kind of level productions, I don't want to get political here, but you know, it's a lot of like old white guys that are in charge of everything, right? So they're kind of hiring, you know, their friends and the people that they've worked with, right, which are other old white guys. So it's just kind of been the, I guess tradition is kind of the word to use there, for so long at that level that it's trickled down.
Sure.
And I think a lot of women probably up until recently have been discouraged from really, you know, pursuing it. And they're discouraged because they're not seeing other women doing it. And, you know, I think now
or they get stopped right at those meetings. Like we've had a guest on the show say like, why am I standing on a board full of, the white older men who are telling me how a high school girl, like what she's going through, like, how do you know? And they're telling, they're directing her in a way like, I think the story should go this way. And she's like, but that's not the story. And that's not what happened. So that's just an example of like, what can kind of happen. And so then you get stopped, right? And then it's just hard to get, you know, your pitch in the way like it kind of was. And yeah, so I like Tessa was saying, it's just then it kind of then trickles down. It's like, okay, well then who can I bring this story to that's going to take me seriously and get this produced? Because no one's, I feel like for women, like no one's listening to me or they don't want to listen because I'm not part of the circle.
So at the risk of, you know, bringing something that's potentially hard to kind of speak on, I know that there was recently a movement in Hollywood, right? And I'm sure that is probably still going on. It's just not as loud with everything else going on. The fact that women are not getting good opportunities because they're not playing ball, right? So the whole Harvey Weinstein thing was just the basically the tip of the iceberg. And, you know, there's that happens all the time where people try to take advantage of these women that are trying to come in, get a role and make a name for themselves and all that stuff. And you know, they're taken advantage of if they don't play ball, you know, if, you know, for a role, they have to do certain things that, you know, that would, you know, land them there and that they would never have thought they would have to do. So it's very difficult. And I do see that. I can see how that something like that would happen in Hollywood. How has that changed at all? And I'm asking you because you're there, you're in Hollywood, you're in that environment. So has that changed at all? Has anything out there, like what is the environment out there like right now for women?
I think it's changed in a lot of ways, but a lot of it is a lot more subtle that is still going on. Okay. I mean,
exactly.
It's kind of like if you would relate it to like racism, for example, like we're not segregated, you know, black and white anymore, but there's still so much systemic racism that exists. And like similarly, I mean, I think so much light has been shown on the Me Too movement that that is not where it used to be, thank God. But, you know, women are still getting shut down a lot of times just for being women, or they have to do so much extra that a man with the same amount of experience, the same kind of story that he's bringing to the table doesn't have to do simply because he's a male. And so it's definitely still present for sure, but it's a lot more subtle.
And it could be even subtle just like in the kind of guidance or mentorship that you can receive out there. You know, I've tried to find mentors and sometimes it's just like the little things, like maybe it should be like, so another thing we kind of for our future projects are like the femme fatale kind of characters, but we want to reinvent those kind of roles. So sexuality and the way sexiness is, we don't want to make it less sexy, but there's a like kind of women's perspective on that. And I feel like, even that can get kind of soured into something that it's like, no, we're not trying to be like provocative. Like what is, you might want it to like to sound like just like little things like that. I feel like can get, you know, muddled still. And like, you're like, okay, but that's not what I wanted.
One of the things that I've noticed watching, you know, Netflix series, all the, you know, that's the big thing now, getting on a series on Netflix or Amazon or any of these exclusive series, there's a lot more sexuality, more sexual nudity, right? And I see that and I'm like, man, for example, Game of Thrones is a perfect example. It's like pornography series right there. And I see that and I'm like, how do you ask a woman? I think men are way more inclined to be much more willing to do scenes like that than women in general, just because I think that obviously men and women think differently. How do you ask a woman to do that? And if they don't do it, you know, like I think Emily Clark is, you know, one of them that, you know, if she didn't do certain scenes in that series, would she still be where she is today? And that's right. Sort of how I, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Again, very separated from Hollywood, but I can see that happening. And I can see that women are placed in a tough spot where if they don't do scenes like that, they're probably not going to get other opportunities like Emily Clark has. And that's super sad, in my opinion.
I think too, it's it isn't really just about like the nudity.
Okay.
It's the way that it's treated. You know, sure. Like a lot of times,
exactly.
You'll have a sex scene, right? And it's a man and a woman, but the woman's the only one that you see any like actual skin on, basically.
Right,
you
know what I mean? Right.
So it's always like the women that are especially sexualized. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that is slowly changing, which I've noticed. But that's a big thing about it, you know, and especially with something like a period piece, like Game of Thrones or like Westerns, for example, you know, you're going back then when women were just hypersexualized and men weren't, you know, mm-hmm. So they're like treated in a very different light that I get it. It's a period piece. You're trying to be true to then, but like for the actors that are involved, you know, and it's tough too, because going back to like the whole SAG thing, you're supposed to get like a nudity bump if you're a SAG actor and you're appearing naked on screen. But even big budget things don't always follow those rules. I mean, I have a friend who was an extra on a show that I won't mention, but they gave them really big problems with that. It was just like a kind of a crowd. There, a lot of people were naked in the background and she had so much trouble with it and she didn't want to do it, but she was also like, well, that's like my paycheck for the month, you know? So, yeah.
Wow. Those are the things again. And I do want to stress this. This is from my opinion, living outside of Hollywood, you know, not even interested in getting into that whole world. But I do see it from a distance. And that's sort of how I see it. I don't see narratives. And although I do enjoy films, like I enjoyed Game of Thrones. I really did. And I thought it was a fantastic, fantastic series. But then, yeah, I'm just seeing things like that for what they are rather than how you just explained it to me. So that's really good to sort of consider that. And people appreciating the art like that in that manner. So obviously that's different, you know, those are two different perspectives on that. And I don't know, I just see that and it's hard,
but that's uh-huh. what we want to do. We want to change the scope here where it's like, okay, if there's nudity, how do you bring that to the camera? And again, what's like obviously comfortable for the actors involved, like, you know, it's making that movement of we can create still content like that, but what's the viewpoint and what's the environment surrounding it
Interesting.
Is important to us. Yeah, if we, you know, go that way. But yeah, like you can there, just because back then like certain roles, like, you know, the Westerns, as Tessa said, and the other period pieces, it's again your choice as the director and camera person to kind of skew how it's seen, because it's not all just about that, you know.
Oh man, so thank you guys so much for coming on. Where can people find all of your content?
So our podcast, FemRegard Podcast, is available on all major platforms and YouTube as well. And then our website, which is just FemRegard.com, is where you can find, you know, all of our projects. There's even direct links to the podcast there. And then we post almost daily updates on our social media. So we're on Facebook as Femme Regard Productions, on Instagram, where we're probably the most active, is just at Femme Regard, and Twitter at Femme _ Regard. And we just started a TikTok. I don't know if we're going to stick with it. Who knows
yet? Oh, man, that's something that I'm just, I'm dreading it. I really don't want to get into TikTok. It's just too much social media. I run more accounts than Instagram would allow me to have on my phone. So I have to, it's just so much. It's like 7 accounts that I run. And then TikTok. Oh goodness, that's a lot. But thank you guys so much for coming on. And are you guys, you have your own personal Instagrams too, right?
Yes. So mine is at Miss Tessa Lauren, and then Carolina.
I'm at La Femme Carolina.
I'll be putting links to all of that on the show notes for this episode. Tessa and Carolina, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there you guys have it. That was my conversation with Tessa and Carolina. I hope that you enjoyed it, that you learned a thing or two on this episode. And I'm going to be putting links, as I mentioned, on the show notes for this episode. So you can go ahead and find the Femme Regard podcast over on Instagram, on iTunes. You could find it wherever they have it. And also I'll be putting links to their Instagram accounts on the show notes as well. So you can go over there and check that out for that. And again, like I said, I hope that, you know, this episode, this information was able to help you guys have a better understanding of what goes on in Hollywood, of women in the industry in general, and how, I guess, underrepresented they are. And I definitely appreciate Tessa and Carolina for the work that they do in trying to get more women involved. And, you know, it's just a cause that I think that is worth getting behind. So with all that said, just remember in the show notes, I'll have all those links ready for you guys. And if this show or if any other show or episode was valuable to you guys, would you consider sharing this with a friend, letting them know that there's some good information over here? And also leave us a 5-star review over on iTunes. It definitely helps us a lot with the rankings. And I do appreciate every single one of you that listens to this episode, that listens to the podcast and is subscribed to this podcast in general. You are very much appreciated. And also don't forget our Facebook group. Go and say hi. Try to stay active on that as well. So thank you once again, and I will see you on the next episode of the iFilmmaker Podcast.